Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome in to an Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, Eric Scopel, Jared Mack on the show today. It's March 15th. It's a Wednesday. It's less than 24 hours upon recording of this podcast when spring football opens up. All three of us will be at spring football. It's going to be an exciting time. We'll discuss kind of our thoughts going into spring ball here in a little bit, but we've also got an opportunity to basically just interrogate Jared Mack for as much information as we can pull out of him on Pro Day. He attended Pro Day for Oregon yesterday, which was on Tuesday the 14th. 12 participants for the Ducks, took part in Pro Day. And maybe it's just me, Jared, but I think the 13th guy that I was most curious about was Bo Nix throwing. Kind of gets a little bit of a preview for the scouts next year. We'll talk about the other 12, but how did Bo look? Because that's a
important... I mean, he was throwing routes to Chase Cota. It was fine. He didn't. It looked like Bo Nix last year. It wasn't that big of a whole discussion. It was nice to see Bo, though. I think that's like the first time I've seen an actual member of the team throw for the college pro day. I don't remember a time where that's happened before. I was talking with James Krepa of the Oregonian. He thought it might be Marcus Mariota because, well, he's no longer employed by the Atlanta Falcons, and it's a pro day. It's an opportunity to show his stuff. But Bo looked good. Chase looked good in that little segment there. Just something like 15 throws. Nothing crazy. Had some good deep balls, though. But it was nice to see him still on the field. That's for sure, especially after how last season overall ended with his health.
For sure.
Go ahead, Eric. Oh, I was just going to say, Jared, thank you, by the way, for covering Pro Day. I know you love Pro Day. I hate Pro Day. It's my least favorite event to cover every year, so I'm happy you've taken that one on. I was on my shoulders for probably 4 years, maybe, and I'm okay with you being the one in charge of it. So why do you like Pro Day? You said you love Pro Day. I'm actually curious. Sell me on why this is fun.
Pro Day is fun because, you're there for a couple hours, sure, and it's not as high pace as what a basketball scrimmage would be or even a baseball scrimmage would be. There's a lot of standing around and you're just, recording guys' measurements. But I think all those measurements play a very integral part of how these guys are determined to be a draft stock. A lot of guys will go in there as, favorites of the players, whatever the case may be, and they'll come out of there and no NFL team is going to want them because of their measurables. And I think that's a really interesting part of football. Obviously, there is a second half of football where you have to go onto the field and play the game and make the plays and do all that stuff. But I don't think people put enough interest into what these guys look like during the underwear Olympics, what their 40 times are, what their 10 cone shuttle drill is, what their L shuttle drill is, vertical and broad jumps that measure explosiveness. This is why I love the combine. This is why I always do the combine stuff for our website. I think it's a really integral part of football. And I think there's a niche audience that really likes it. That includes me. It might be because of my numbers. I don't know, like for baseball, how much I like numbers involved and how to demonstrate how good a player is or not. granted, this doesn't demonstrate how good a player is or not, but it certainly can give you a deeper perspective as to why they could be a good player further down the road or why they'll make an immediate impact when they come into the league as a rookie. So pro days are fun. It's not as exciting as the combine because there's just not as much talent. But, you know, over the last couple of years, Oregon has always had somebody who's going to be, with Christian Gonzalez this year, probably a top 10 pick. So, you know, 31 of 32 NFL teams were there, a lot of scouts. I don't think there were any head coaches or general managers there, but, you know, there were plenty of people watching the excitement. And, you know, every year you get to see something that you didn't think you would see during the season, like Ryan Walk jumping 31 inches straight up into the air, you know, stuff like that. So I still think it's a hell of a lot of fun. And you kind of just get to hang out with the media members on the beat and kind of pick their brain for 4 hours. So I enjoy doing that as well.
You brought it up. Jared has a story on duckterritory.com, his takeaways from that. But I was going to ask you, it felt like Ryan Walk was maybe the surprise of the day, his performance, because he did do some pretty notable things that would have scored out pretty well at the actual combine.
Yeah, I would say that Walk and Chase Cotto were the main guys. I think Chase did more impressive work to improve his draft stock. I'm not sure what Ryan Walk's draft stock is. I don't think there is one. Right. He's probably a UDFA, which is fine. Walk had a 31-inch vertical jump, 9-foot broad jump, ran a 40 and 5.10 flat, 28 reps in the bench press, which is all really good. I mean, that puts him right in line in the middle of the pack and what the combine was. The reason why his draft prospectus is not high is because he's still listed at 6'2", 294 pounds, and has a wingspan of 74 inches, which is 6'2". He's one of us. He's a quote-unquote, he's a normie when it comes to these draft grades. So that's going to be a problem to overcome. However, that's what Ryan Walk has been doing the last 4 or 5 years at Oregon, is overcoming these athletic problems where he just doesn't stack up compared to what recruits coming in are at. And he's shown the last 2 years that he's a very formidable offensive guard that can certainly take the place and play left or right guard. At the NFL level, we'll see. I'm sure he'll get a call from some camp and get an offer to come through. So that's what we're all hoping for. However, the guy who improved his draft stock the most was Chase Cotto. Cotto measured in at just under 6'4", 201 pounds, wingspan of 76.7 inches. Vertical jump at 37 and a half inches, broad jump at 10'6", 40 time of 4.50. So a guy of his size moving at a 4.5 level is really good. I think someone who's a bit more explosive than what Devin Williams' numbers were last season at the combine, although Devin is a full-on 6'4" person, so that really helps him. But Cotto did well, certainly won, I would say, Oregon's, guys who didn't get the combine invite. He talked about that a little, and I accidentally asked him a question about that, which I forgot that the combine is invite only. So that was a mistake by me. But, you know, Cotto was excellent all day long. I'm sure he certainly turned some heads. I will say another low-key member of the Winners Club at Oregon's Pro Day, punter Adam Berry. Adam Berry went 45, 47, 53, 45, 47, 38, 53 with his punts outside in the nice cold Eugene air, with Carson Battle snapping to him. He had a pro day himself. It was pretty impressive. And he had 3 punts inside the 50-yard line. His first one was absolute perfection, bounced at the 2-yard line, backspun to the 1 and sat there. It was just beautiful. One of the best punts I've seen in person. Adam Berry also registered as 6'6", 221 pounds, 79-inch wingspan, which doesn't really matter too much for punters. However, 4.9, 140. So he kind of moved for a guy his size. It was a bit discouraging because the entire time Jared Denny of On3 and I were just sitting there saying, where the hell was this all season long?
I was just thinking the same thing, Jared. Yeah. I was like, if he could have done this consistently, Oregon's season goes maybe a little bit differently. And yet he was the opening day punter, pulled midseason, re-given an opportunity at the very end. So that's sometimes the breaks.
He certainly improved his draft stock, though. I don't know where it was or what it was, but he had a really good day. I hate to say it. Hang times well into the 4, almost 5-second range. It was good.
I just wanted to explain for a second. So people, I also love data and information. Like that's, I don't know if people might be familiar with the Scopel system. That's exactly what that was. Like I grew up into that stuff. The reason I don't like the pro day is the weight, because and it looks like they've updated it. So you're getting the jump and some of the, like some of those information before you leave the facility. When I was doing it primarily, you left with zero information. So you're just watching people run and jump for 2.5 hours without any data to know who was doing well. And then you left asking questions.
Eric's just trying to cover himself now.
No, I don't think I'm covering myself. This is exactly what it was. And then you had to interview these kids being like, yeah, it looked like you ran kind of fast, but I have no idea if that was 4.4 or if that was 4.7 because there's no 40 times. So I always found it to be just like a lot of, hey, these guys look like they're doing good things, but I have no actual tangible evidence that any of this is any good until after I leave when I write my story. And at that point, yeah, I'm actually making my deductions, which is totally inverted for how you'd like to go through the process of doing something like this. So that's why I didn't like it. But it's not because I didn't like the data. It's just because I thought the weight and the way it was set up was really poorly set up.
Yeah, the last couple years before, I mean, the first one I attended was the day the world ended before March 2020. That one, they just yell out like vertical jumps and broad jumps. So that's easier to do. But 40 times, you still have to wait. However, the processing time between end of pro day this year and 40 time information being released was much quicker than I anticipated, which kind of disrupted my schedule, but that was okay.
It used to be 3.5 hours. I used to get home at 2:30 and get my 40 times by 6. And I would be like, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a fun day. Anyway, sorry, I'm criticizing the event, but it sounds like it's been streamlined, which is great, Jared. I did have a question for you on the guys that were, because we've kind of separated this into the two groups, which are guys that have been invited to the combine, which sort of distinguishes you from guys that weren't. Guys that weren't typically have a much, I would say, the odds of being actually selected are much slimmer. Of the guys that were invited to the combine, and we've already kind of seen them go through this process, was there anybody who maybe this time around put up a mark that distinguished themselves from their previous showing in Indianapolis, or maybe a guy that you think just really showed well and maybe improved their stock, or maybe going the other way, somebody who hurt themselves this time around compared to what they did just a couple of weeks ago in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the guys who were in Indianapolis didn't really do much on Oregon's pro day, which is to be expected. Like, you know, Gonzalez only participated in position drills. So did TJ Bass and so did Alex Forsyth, which was surprising because he had a hamstring injury and didn't run at the combine. So clearly that's probably still bothering him. But I think one guy who made an upgrade to his draft stock was Malasala Amuave-Lalu. He ran a 5.09 40-yard dash, which puts him – I had this written down in my article, but I think that puts him eighth overall in terms of the 40-yard dash from combine participants. His 10-yard split, which is something that NFL coaches and general managers really pay attention to with offensive linemen, was a 1.74 seconds, which is pretty darn good. I think that put him tied for 14th with Broderick Jones of Georgia, who's a first-round draft pick or projected first-round draft pick. So those are really good marks for Sala. You know, he comes in at 6 foot, basically 6 foot six, 320 pounds, 82 inch wingspan, which is yeah, absurd. Yeah. And he's a mountain of a man. And for him to run a 5.09 is 40 is really impressive. You know, other guys, just like I said, didn't participate. I will say that Noah Sewell ran through the drills. I'm not sure what it is, but watching Sewell at the combine and the pro day, it's just something off. It's just not, not the explosive guy you expect to see. And you kind of saw that at the combine with how
that also kind of that matches some of the stuff we saw last fall too, doesn't it?
Correct. And it matches what the combine saw, where his 40 time was third or fourth worst of the linebacking group. His split time was okay, middle of the road. His cone drills were pretty mediocre. His broad jump and his vertical jump were pretty mediocre. But his bench press was second highest, which is kind of what we'd come to expect from Sewell, just being a really strong guy who's an old school linebacker type, 6'2", 250 pounds. It's interesting. I'm not sure what that's going to mean in terms of his draft stock, but I mean, he came into the season as a first round pick. Or projected first round pick. He's no longer there. I don't think he'll get back there. Yeah. Period. But and the other thing that annoyed me, but this is more of like a journalist media perspective thing, he didn't talk to us at the end of the pro day. Like there are three guys in Oregon's pro day who are going to be surefire draft picks, basically. And really there's two, because who knows what the offensive line will happen. And it's Noah and Christian Gonzalez. And Christian Gonzalez spoke, but Noah chose not to. And which, you know, it happens. We've only talked to him like six times his entire college career.
That's been so way his entire career.
That. Yeah.
I was just
right. Yeah. I just, you know,
entire career.
Yeah. It just, I don't know if it necessarily gives him any benefits for not stepping in front of a microphone around all these NFL scouts and people, and around a, you know, a local conglomerate of your media members too. So.
All right. Let's take a quick break. And we'll transition over to spring football, which begins here in the quickest of time.
CBS Friday, TV's hottest show is Fire Country.
I'm not a hero.
I'm in orange for a reason.
They're taking 12 months off your sentence. You're free.
Lady.
With a special epic season finale.
Now that I'm out, I need something to get me up in the morning.
You are a firefighter.
Used to be.
That will be unforgettable.
In the name of your life's happiness, go get your girl.
She's getting married tomorrow.
Says, when do you let anything get in the way of what you want?
The Fire Country season finale, Friday, 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars, new season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. Spring ball is here, guys. We will be inside the, I'm assuming, the practice fields or maybe the Mo. Over, under, what are we saying here? Let's make our predictions here.
Outside. Thursday's supposed to be nice.
I think if Jared's saying outside, I'll say inside just because it has been raining most of the week. I'll just take the Eeyore approach and say it might rain and we'll be inside.
I will say outside as well. It's supposed to be 61 degrees on Thursday. Beautiful spring weather for spring football. We've discussed some of this before, but I think there's a lot of intrigue in this spring football for Oregon. We're going to run through kind of just some things that we're all curious about, excited to see, and what have you. But I guess I'll lead off here. I'm just excited. The reason why I brought up Bo Nix in the first half of the show was because I'm excited to see, A, what does Bo Nix look like? Is he fully healthy? Is he a full participant? What is Bo Nix's spring experience going to be like? Because we've seen previous staffs at Oregon. We've seen like the head guy, the quarterback, have a really light spring where it's just, hey, throw the ball in one-on-one drills, you know, build up that arm strength, but you're not going to be put into a position to get hurt, or, you know, we're going to give a lot of the reps in air quotes, in-game reps to the backups to get them ready because you are ready. Or we've also seen quarterbacks go through everything. And, you know, I'm curious to see how they handle Bo Nix with that, because it is a new offensive coordinator, Will Stein. And then maybe more importantly, I'm curious to see just, A, what's the growth from Ty Thompson since we've last seen him? And B, how far along is Austin Novosad, the freshman quarterback? Is it truly going to be a competition between Ty and Austin for that number two job?
I don't think we've shared with listeners, though, just that we will be able to watch some practice, which we weren't sure of earlier, which is exciting. I think it's been stated, but just a reminder, we've got practice Thursday, we've got practice Saturday, and then they're going to be off for a couple of weeks. They'll come back first week of April. And then 13 practices leading up to the spring game, which I guess technically the spring game is the 13th of April, but the 13th practice of April, I should say, not the 13th from a date perspective. The spring game is on the 29th. But that's kind of what the format will look like. So we will have practice reports in March. We'll have practice reports in April, which will be fun to look at. Hopefully we'll get an opportunity to see a little 7-on-7 in practice, maybe even a little 11-on-11 on in practice to give a feel for what some of this depth chart stuff looks like, or to draw some sort of conclusions. But I think for me, the biggest part that I'm most excited about, especially these first couple of days, is just the same thing I think we talked about when we did our storyline draft last week, is I'm just really excited to see all the new guys. You know, I don't have an exact number, and that'll be something we do tomorrow when we get there, of like, okay, who all is here? I know Matt up on duckterritory.com for his VIP, the things he's looking forward to on the first day of practice, that was one of them, is just who's actually here, you know? Who's which of these new guys has enrolled? We have a pretty darn good idea.
We know some, but we don't know all.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we've got a pretty complete list, but there might be a couple of guys we don't know. And, you know, we think the number is going to be a little over 30. Maybe it'll end up being closer to 36. So I think that's the part that'll be interesting. And then, and kind of seeing where everybody fits too, because, you know, there are several of these guys they bring in without, I would say, exact clarity of where they're lining up. Like sometimes you bring in a player as a defensive back and you go, okay, is he a corner? Is he a safety? Is he a nickel? Where does this guy fit? So, you know, you have similar kind of things on the offensive line of, okay, is this guy being recruited as an offensive tackle or an offensive guard? And we'll get some of these early indications of where they line up. But I'm really excited to see the newcomers. Some of these portal guys will look at differently than the freshmen. The freshmen, it'll be, hey, these guys look physically ready or don't look physically ready. The portal guys are, these guys should look like starters day one. And that should be a thing we're coming away out of these first couple of practices of like, okay, Jordan Birch looks like he's going to be one of the dudes defensively. And offensively, some of these additions they've made, these guys, you know, whether it's a Tez Johnson or some of these offensive linemen, we think they're going to have impacts. So yeah, that's to me the big thing for these first couple of practices is, okay, let's take a look at the guys that are new, because gosh, almost half of the players in camp here, maybe even about half, are going to be players that have never been in Oregon practice uniforms before.
Jared, I don't want to cut you off. You don't have a question or a statement here, but I want to ask Eric and you guys on that same topic, this question: do we think some guy that we expect to be there isn't? That's maybe that's happened a couple times the last couple springs, where it's like we show up and then we're not going to name names or anybody like that, but it's just like we've shown up and been like, oh, that guy is no longer here. Where is he at? Oh, he's not even on the roster. Do we think that scenario plays out on Thursday?
I think the odds are higher of that now, given the portal and given the way with all these newcomers being here and all that. There's just more opportunity and less clarity, I'd say, than ever before on some of this. But yeah, we don't have any, at least I haven't heard like, oh gosh, so-and-so left the program, you'll be ready to report
right
on Thursday. But I certainly wouldn't be surprised going in if, and it could be as simple as a player we thought was enrolled didn't end up enrolling and we just didn't hear about it until then, right? Or it could be like Matt saying, Adrian Jackson on like the first day of fall camp, he's not on the roster. And you're like, where's Adrian Jackson? It's like, yeah, he's no longer with the team, or however that played out last year. Those kind of things happen all the time.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. Like Eric said, those things just kind of happen all the time. And there's a plethora of possibilities of how these guys could not be on the team. And I'm sure, you know, like, unless you're checking the transfer portal, well, I guess the transfer window is closed at this point. But, I mean, there are plenty of guys who could, you know, basically do what they did last season during the season and just kind of sit out. Or maybe go through the motions, and once the transfer window opens, like, hey, they're in.
You could have a guy literally just sit all of spring and then enter the portal in May. That's the thing that could happen. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, he might even go to practice though. Like he could have just looked at the roster that they brought in from signing day in February and said, sorry.
I'm good.
Adios. I'm not here.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's the case. Should I just jump into what I'm looking forward to?
Yeah.
It's tough because both of you guys' picks are great. And Eric, I think yours is exactly what I'm most excited to do for tomorrow and then for Saturday. That's a tough one. I'm excited to overreact to everything that we see on the first day. That's my that's my biggest thing. I think that's going to happen a million times over regarding positions, regarding how guys look, regarding battles on the field, regarding hairstyles. I don't know. I'm excited for that. Just be prepared. I'm sure we're all going to be like boys or girls on Christmas Eve, getting ready for Christmas today. And tomorrow is going to be the opening of the presents. So we're all going to be very excited by the time we hop onto a podcast later in the day. Just a side note, very excited for our annual walk-on draft and our new walk-on players, because Oregon, I talked to James Kruppy, the recording in yesterday. He mentioned that Oregon now has 5 walk-on long snappers this year. So it's going to be a whole round of long snapping drafts when the draft comes. So excited to kind of figure out who's the cream of the crop.
This is pre-scouting though, because I think we're going to do the draft in.
I was going to say
in fall, right?
We're walk-on draft is a little early right now.
Yeah.
Well, you got to start studying the tape at this point. You're not really sure who's going to be there when it's your time to come around to a pick. So I think it's important to get those notes down now.
You know what I really want to see though is Big Z in pads. Just give the guy a shot.
Oh, Big Z.
You know,
that would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be exciting? Wouldn't that be the most exciting thing to see on Thursday as everybody walks through is just Big Z, all 7-5 of him in some pads and some, you know, 3-foot long sneakers,
shoes.
Cleats. That'd be great.
No, I would leave. That's all I needed to see that day. I'd write it like 500 words on it.
Eric, are you done, Jared? I don't want to cut your.
Oh, yeah, I'm good. I've talked a lot this podcast.
Eric, you dropped the 7 hottest position battles in your opinion.
Yeah.
What's the one that you feel like is the number one? Because I don't know if we'll agree here.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the story's up on Duck Territory, by the way, for those who want to check it out. I cut. Honestly, I had a lot more than 7 to potentially pick through, but I ended up.
Okay, well, first, 7. Before you answer that question, what was one that didn't make the list? Mentions. Yeah.
Ooh. Well, that gets sort of tough. I mean, I felt like I did too much. And you go look at the story. This is awkward for those who haven't read it. Maybe pause and go take a peek at least and see. You can read the list and maybe not. You don't have to read all my words. I'd love you to read my words. But if you don't have the time, you want to pause it and look. I felt like I did a little too much offense. I would have liked to have included more something from the defensive kind of front a little bit. Something, whether it be inside linebacker or defensive line. I just had a hard time. You know, with the linebacker being one, because I don't know if Justin Jacobs is healthy. I don't expect he will be. So I don't know if that's a really spring competition. I think we expect Boss at least to be kind of that veteran presence holding on to the position he had last year. So felt like I could have done a little more defense. Offensively, I think I pretty much exhausted it. If you look at it, I included basically every possession except for running back. So I think the thing it's funny. To your original question now, Matt, of kind of where, which one is the most interesting to me or the one I'm most excited by?
Oh, yeah.
I think there's 2 answers. I think the one that maybe matters the most is the one that people will care about the least, but is the punting position because, gosh, they just need to find one, man.
So
I included that in there because, and also because we know for a fact that the 3 of us are going to get to watch a heck of a lot of punts this spring. So we are going to have.
Oh, yeah.
Front row and center to analyze Punt the God. Hell out of this. Yeah. So I expect, honestly, Jared, we haven't talked about this. We might really want to be tracking the hang time and the approximate distance of most of these punts and have a list going, have a list at the end of spring of like,
you have a stopwatch?
Yeah. Ross James, average of Ross James, 3.5 hang time, average punt length of 42.5 yards. And but what did we think about Luke Dunn? I have 46 yards, but only a 3.31 hang time, a little bit, you know, a little bit more of a line drive punter. I'm just joking here. I have no idea how any of these guys are going to punt. But like that's going to be the one that's going to be the easiest for us to assess. It's to some degree just because unless they change format, we will be able to watch a lot of punting. So there's that one. And I think the one that probably, the ones that probably matter the most will be safety and then some of the interior offensive line stuff. Because I think those two have, I don't want to say more stakes, but those are positions where like we could see an experienced guy who's got starting experience maybe lose ground on a starting job he thought he might be able to land and then look at the portal. So that's why I look at like between Steven Jones and Marcus Harper, presumably one of those guys won't be starting this year. And if that becomes clear in spring, maybe one of them looks at the portal. And the same thing at safety. We've talked about that one so much, but we all know that, you know, that between the Jamal Hill, Steve Stevens, Brian Addison trio, those guys played basically every snap last year at the 2 safety spots. If it becomes clear to one of them that that's not going to be the, you know, that that's not going to be the case and Evan Williams or somebody else is encroaching on their territory, one of them might leave. So I think those are probably the 2 most important ones, but punting will be the one I probably have the best feel for.
I'm thrilled that you included punting in this conversation. I know you
included it wouldn't be Eric Scopel if he didn't include punting.
It wouldn't. It really wouldn't. And I was going to bring it up if you didn't. I'm glad that I don't have to, but I will belabor the point and talk about it some more. A lot of new specialists this year for Oregon. Obviously, we have Luke Dunn. We're going to figure out how to pronounce that eventually. Like I said, you have the five true walk-on long snappers. You still have Luke Basso back there as a long snapper. Camden Lewis, Andrew Boyle is still there. And incoming freshman Grant Meters, who is one of the highest-rated kickers in the country coming into Oregon. I don't think that Camden Lewis's job is, you know, up for grabs or anything like that because he's been great the last two seasons. But I'm interested. I'm interested to see what this is, what Grant is, because I think Camden only has one more year of eligibility left. I think this upcoming season is his final year.
This is it.
Am I right? This is it. Yeah, yep. this is the last dance. This is it. So special teams is going to be huge because it was just so bad last season. So punting is going to be a huge capitalization for Oregon this year. I still think position battle-wise – I like the linebacker idea, but yeah, still with Justin Jacobs potentially out, potentially playing, I'm not sure we'll get a good look at what it's going to really look like. There's a lot of position battles on this team. And for the first couple of days in spring camp, I'm not sure how much they're going to show us or anything like that. I think I'm most interested to see still the cornerback spot. I think there's three guys who could all be a number one. I think there's three guys who could all be a number two. And, you know, judging by how it's going to go in the first couple of weeks of spring camp, we'll kind of figure that out. I do think that that's more of a position battle for fall camp that we'll get to eventually. But there's a lot of dudes there. There's probably the most talent at cornerback, at least statistically on paper, that Oregon has had in a long time in one room there. Eric, I know you did the article a long time ago. Is it five of the top 10 cornerbacks Oregon has ever signed in that room, or is it six?
It is five, and I had to redo it yesterday for that story, the seven players, because that's in there. Yeah, they have five of the top 10 recruits are on this roster at the corner position.
Yeah, and so we'll see if any of those come to fruition and become a top corner, but I still think, you know, Kyrie Jackson, Tre'Quest Bridges, and Dante Manning are your top three right now. It just, you know, Bennett Williams had some nice things to say about Dante Manning yesterday at Pro Day. Says, you know, all you need is like one off season and things can start to snap and the sky's the limit for him. So, you know, some good words there, but we'll have to see it when it comes to practice and actual situations.
Did Bennett have anything to say about Evan?
He did.
His brother.
He said that Evan is enjoying the school, enjoying the campus, enjoying the coaching staff, that kind of stuff, that he's really fitting into this defense, that he plays a little bit like Bennett, but is more of, I think he said it was more of a coverage guy than Bennett was. So I guess that's a nice thing to hear. I don't know. Bennett did admit that his Washington game wasn't the best of his career. So, yeah, at this point. But, it seemed like Evan was fitting into the team, really doing well with the guys around him.
Cool.
Bennett also just talked overall about the defense, said he thinks it's going to be a big year for those guys. So we'll find out tomorrow.
I think Bennett's probably one of the more well-spoken, just generally good dudes that we've seen run through the program. Like, I'm not surprised at all that he admitted that the Washington game was bad. And he even did that after the Washington game.
Right.
He came out when he didn't have to and owned up to it. I was going to go position battle with one that I don't think has any real, like, drastic impact on the season, but it's just fascinating to watch, and that's the slot. With Hudson and Tez Johnson and maybe Gary Bryant Jr. from USC, if Gary Bryant Jr. comes to Oregon. Because, if Chris Hudson is your starting slot guy, I think you're in a good position, you know. But the staff has made it clear, we've talked about this at length, that they want more out of that group. And just to see that play out is going to be fun to see. How does Chris Hudson embrace it? It's a two-year starter with the staff coming in and challenging him. Mm-hmm. Does this open the door maybe for Hudson or somebody else, Tez, or if Gary Bryant does come, can they play another position? And does this, you know, does this get interesting? Can they play on the field together? I don't know. But that's just this whole back and forth. That's what I'm, you know, really interested to see play out as well. It's just, I think Oregon could be really good with Hudson at the slot. I think Oregon could be really good with Tez Johnson at the slot. But who is the guy is the question, and I don't know who it is.
You actually, just one add-on. I don't know if anybody has anything else before we wrap. You mentioned earlier guys not being on the roster. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some guys on the roster. I'm not saying Gary Bryant, probably not scholarship guys, but like last year, JJ Greenfield just randomly was just here and nobody thought it was going to happen. I still remember getting the roster and then actually he wasn't on the roster, but I IDing him at practice and turning to James Crepin and being like, because that was an inside joke for all of 2021 was where are Lance Wilhoit and JJ Greenfield? And it was like, no one wanted to talk about it. There's no answers publicly. We heard some things behind the scenes maybe, but even that was kind of like pretty. And then suddenly here they are. And it's kind of like, so I'm not expecting there's going to be a player who's been, you know, missing for a while who shows up, but there might be a couple guys like other example last year where Hassan Ritter and Dalton just randomly kind of popping up from Hawaii, two guys who were not on scholarship, who I think at least Dalton, I don't, was Hassan Ritter on scholarship at Hawaii? I can't remember if he was. I
think Dalton at Hawaii. I'm not sure.
Dalton was so, but like just guys who just pop up who are actually like maybe contributors, you know, and again, those guys didn't have huge contributions, but both were on travel rosters and got into games and contributed a little bit here and there. So there might be a guy or two here who just pop up and you go, hey, that guy was at San Jose State last year and he was on scholarship and now he's at Oregon walking on for whatever reason or something. So those are the kind of interesting little nuggets you might see as well over the next couple of days as we get to see the roster for the first time. We're going to be getting it. I would imagine we'll get some sort of probably incomplete without Heights and Weights roster Thursday morning. So look for one of us to tweet that out and then do some analysis on it later.
I like that call out because how many times have we seen like a Tyler Nanny show up and be like, holy heck, that guy's a walk-on? Like or Aaron Smith at running back. There's dudes where you're like, that guy's intriguing because he's definitely got the physical attributes, but you know, what's holding him back? So that's a good call. I like that. All right, that's going to do it for us here on this edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast. We'll be back on Friday when we record our first post-practice podcast, breaking down everything that happened Thursday, and then we'll have another one later on next week. But until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!